shooting for the moon. He not busy being born, is busy dying. Bob Dylan. It's all right, Ma, I'm only bleeding. If bullshit was water, we'd have all drowned by now. Anonymous. I want to talk about the word power again. A word easily used and just as easily misunderstood. What is power, after all, but the ability to do? If we are truly to possess the ability to do anything, to truly possess power, it goes without saying that we must be conscious, present, awake, and free of all internal and external influences at the moment of doing. In short, to do, to possess power, requires that we choose to do, that we make a conscious choice. If one accepts that definition, then those things we do automatically, in reaction to events, feelings, or internal programming, cannot be considered true doing, in that they are not truly done by us, but by our habits. For our purpose here, that sort of doing can more accurately be called non-doing, or acting out the unconscious. In such cases, it did it, you didn't. There was no conscious choice. It can be argued that most, if not all, of what we do is of this sort of doing, out of our control, just happens reflexively. Think about it. How many times have you lashed out at someone automatically because he or she triggered an old rage? You didn't do that. It did. How many times have you repeated a physical act like taking off your shoes? First the left shoe, then the right. You didn't do that. It did. It's often been said, I could do that in my sleep. In fact, we do. More often than we'd care to think. Okay, here's the problem in a nutshell. It is my belief that a true e-myth enterprise requires an e-myth perspective. And to have an e-myth perspective requires an e-myth mind. And my definition of an e-myth mind is one that is capable of objectivity. It is a mind that watches from the outside what is going on in the inside. A mind that can grasp the entirety of the condition in which we find ourselves at once. It is a mind that can seize the whole. Imagine all life as we know it operating within a circle. The objective mind, the e-myth mind, would be one that could live outside of that circle while still living inside of it. The objective mind would be totally unidentified with what's going on inside the circle. Unfortunately, to possess such a mind would require a level of awakeness, of awareness, of unbuffered honesty, of clarity, that simply does not exist in us today, if it ever did. And I believe strongly that rather than getting better, our condition is getting worse. That the likelihood of us becoming more objective, that is, less identified, is slim and growing slimmer all the time. Although I obviously am not an optimist, neither am I a pessimist, nor would I call myself a realist. I'm too far gone for that. But somewhere in the middle of all this, I find myself with a particularly vexing problem for which I have yet to find a name. A problem that plagues me in everything I do, and everywhere I go, and with everyone I meet. And, lest you doubt me, I do mean everyone. No exception. My problem has to do with the absence of true power. Everywhere I go, and in everything I do, I am continually confronted by the overwhelmingly obvious, and to me deeply disturbing fact that all of the people I come into contact with, every last soul, are totally and unconscionably asleep. Gonzo, out to lunch, unautomatic, unconscious. In short, unobjective. Rather than being unidentified with everything going on, that is objective, everyone I meet is hopelessly identified with what's going on, that is subjective. hopelessly inseparable from the events of which their lives are made. In short, I have come to the unhappy conclusion that if the sample I have taken of the world at large is a reasonable approximation of the truth, and I believe an airtight case could be made to support it, then despite what most of us would like to believe, there is no such thing as someone who could honestly call himself or herself an individual, someone who is capable of living both inside and outside the circle at the very same time, who is capable of achieving a state of true separation, that is, objectivity. If that is so, and I believe with all my heart that it is, then the companies, let alone the lives, of such people are doomed before they even begin. I believe that is the reason so few companies achieve even a modest degree of success, or, put more directly, why so many companies fail. It has nothing to do with the absence of business acumen or bad luck, as is commonly supposed. It has more to do with the unconsciousness of the people who create them, and the people who manage them, and the people who work in them, and the people who buy from them, and the people who sell to them, and the people who lend to them. It has to do with us, with all of us, and only with us, with the unconscious condition called human. If I were traveling in a tight social circle with limited interaction among a small select group, you could justifiably say to me, "Expand your horizons, Michael, and your problems will be solved. Not all people are like the ones you've described." Unfortunately, at least for me, after all, it's my problem, that's not the case. I don't travel in a tight social circle. I come into contact with thousands of people each year, a diverse range of people, people who work in every imaginable sector of our society, people who do just about everything people can do in this world of ours. Scientists, craftspeople, artists, mechanics, musicians, business people, ditch diggers, speakers, politicians, carpenters, bank presidents, writers, technicians, computer programmers, loan officers, managers, millionaires, paupers, great thinkers, and dullards. And, despite all their differences, I find it to be tragically true that all of them, every single last living one of them, without exception, are caught hopelessly and helplessly in the muck and mire of deep, lasting, impenetrable sleep. They are all hopelessly identified with what they do and with who they think they are. They are full of themselves. They find it impossible to separate themselves, for even a moment, from the fools they have learned to play, from the costumes they have grown accustomed to wear. And this is as true of the positive thinkers I have met as it is of the negative thinkers I have met. It is as true at the far left of the new age as it is at the far right of the old age. Whether they be humanists or religionists, whether they be apolitical or deeply political, whether they be conservationists or the opposite, whatever that would be, all of them, every last single one of the people I have met, yes, I'm talking about you and me, all of us are dead to the world, asleep. Nobody I have ever met lives outside the circle. Every single one of us has an agenda with which we have become inseparably identified, a role that fits us to a T, a way of moving through the world that has become our persona, our comfort zone, the reflection we see in our moment-to-moment mirror, the personage we continue to convey out there to the rest of the world and in here to ourselves, saying over and over again, automatically, without serious question, in a thousand different instants, to everyone and everything, "That's me." Until finally, we are our agendas, and in the process, we cease to truly be. There can be no freedom as long as we live this way. There can be no true power when one is asleep. There can be no true responsibility when one operates like a machine. And so I am not surprised at the dumb conclusions we business writers reach. I am not surprised that as you search for solutions to your business problems, you are constantly being cajoled to stay inside the circle rather than to step outside it. That you are constantly being invited to become more identified rather than less identified. That you are continually being offered a new technique, a new rhetoric, a new belief, the newest wisdom, the latest insight, whether it be Megatrends 2015 or Six Sigma, or New Age Thinking, or the Information Age, or the Information Worker, Excellence, or Creating Chaos, or One Minute Managing, or Leadership Training, or Win-Win Relationships, or whatever it's called. Because whoever wrote it is speaking about stuff inside the circle, from inside the circle. And all one can get from there is more of the same. It cannot set us free. For the proof, look around you. No matter how many new thoughts, no matter how many new ideas, no matter how many new breakthroughs in human technology come our way, they all will move us in only one direction. Down the street of our sleep into a dream world of delusion. None of them having made a difference. None of them capable of making a difference. And none of them ever will make a difference for you or for me. Not until something in us, in you and me, changes. The problem is that we think we're awake. That we think we already are objective. That we think we already are individuals. That we think we already are free. That we think that we think. The problem is that we think we're making decisions all of the time, when in fact we're not. We have never even learned how to make decisions. We're dreaming hopelessly adrift in a sea of reaction to conditions that control, cajole us, romance us, and delude us. We call these reactions passion. We call these reactions moral indignation. We call these reactions desire. We call these reactions thoughts, hope, interest, and creativity. And we end up praising these reactions as though they were qualities instead. We call our reactions everything but what they really are. Associations, dreams, neural connections, fantasies. And then we take one step further, and this is the malevolent step, the deadly step, the step of psychopathology. We say to ourselves that since all of our conditioning is habitual, then to develop ourselves, to become more effective, to become better people, to become more human, all we have to do is develop better habits. Voila! Rather than attempting to come awake, our solution is to become better at sleeping. This is a very complicated problem. It could go in any direction. On the one hand, I'm presuming to provide you with a prescription, a template for business success. On the other hand, I'm telling you why success is impossible, given the way you and I are. What a conundrum. How do we get around this? How do we pursue the impossible? Is this a cul-de-sac, or is there a way through? The first step in this complicated process is for us to agree about our condition. We must agree that no matter what anyone tells us, no matter how many psychologists we listen to, no matter how many promises experts in enlightenment and human behavior make, no matter how many idealistic and raptured New Age songs of hope come our way about the evolution of man, about the civilizing process, about the glorious future that we all thought awaited us in the glorious third millennium in which we are already several years entrenched, the age of the empowered individual, we are not and have not been becoming more human as time wears on. We are becoming less so by the minute. Examples abound. I walk in a country where violent killings, rapes, robberies, assaults, and burglaries occur every single day. in incomprehensible numbers. I walk in a country in which the vast majority of high school graduates cannot tell you when Abraham Lincoln served as president, do not know where electricity comes from, cannot calculate the circumference of a circle, cannot read at better than 10th grade level, cannot even tell you in what state New York City is located. I walk in a country in which the incidence of battered wives and battered children grows exponentially each year, and in which human abuse, so unfathomable, so inhuman, so degrading, is more pervasive worldwide than at any other time in history. I walk in a country in which I have heard that at least 26.2 million of us have a diagnosed mental disorder, in which roughly 50% of our marriages end in divorce, and in which at least 1.5 million, one out of every 200 Americans, are addicted to cocaine. I walk in a country, in a world, in which our forests are systematically being destroyed, our water is systematically being contaminated, our air is systematically being poisoned, our wildlife is systematically being annihilated, our pets are systematically being abandoned, our people are systematically being ignored, and our families are systematically being decimated at ever-increasing rates with no sign of abatement in any quarter. I live in a country in which at least 42,000 people are killed every year in automobile accidents, in which I have heard that 75% of our families are dysfunctional, in which our entertainment has become increasingly more juvenile, increasingly more violent, increasingly more inane. Walk down the streets of any large city. Try the subway in New York. Yes, it's better than in the past, but it's still not good. And this is what the rest of the world is shooting for? To become more like us? To trade their sleep for our sleep? So much for the new age. So much for being more human. We are a walking disgrace. But take solace. At least it's not our fault. We're all sound asleep, for God's sake. Have you ever watched our Congress in the midst of debate on important issues? Did you observe how sleep works? Did you see our lofty representatives' mouths moving, their eyes inert, their limbs flailing away, their empty sleeves, their shoes filled with straw, their empty mouths uttering empty phrases? Do you understand what was going on? Did you by chance get a picture of yourself watching? Your mouth moving, your eyes inert, your limbs flailing away, your empty sleeves, your shoes filled with straw, your empty mouth uttering empty phrases? Were you shocked by what you saw? All of the solutions out there, every last single one of them, no matter how worthwhile they may sound, mean absolutely nothing if we, the people of this world, remain the same. If we continue to think we're awake, but we're not. If we continue to act as though we are making conscious decisions, that we have chosen to be who we are. But if we see how powerless we have all become, how much of ourselves we have willingly given up, how ready we have been to live in this unconscious state, automatically walking through our lives as though fast asleep, doing our routines, our tap dances, singing our little songs, and repeating our little rituals that long ago lost any semblance of meaning or grace. If we can see that, if for one shuddering, remarkable instant, we can recognize that we are asleep, and we can see that we are passively reciting our own dogmas, our own prescriptions, our own automata, our own ritualized beliefs, then our purpose comes fleetingly to life. It is at the miraculous instant when we first see ourselves, when we recognize how programmed we are and how badly we need to be reprogrammed. It is at this power-packed instant when we come face to face with ourselves, not from inside the circle, but from outside the circle, looking down, so to speak. It is at this instant when anything is possible, and only at this instant. when for a fleeting moment we are wide awake. This is the instant of awakening. It is an instant of intense energy, of intense life, of intense vitality. It is the instant within which the possibility of true freedom can be truly felt and born. And so, my prescription begins and ends with us. My prescription says that to build an e-myth enterprise, one must be interested in far more than just business. Mere business cannot hold the interest of an intelligent person for long. One must be interested in the dignity of one's own life and of the lives of those around us. One must be interested in doing what one does with the utmost attention, with the utmost care, with the utmost interest, and with the utmost engagement. One must set standards, difficult standards, standards that rise above the ordinary, standards that one would be willing to share with the world as exemplars of human behavior, standards that one would be willing to publish for all people to see, standards that one would be willing to be held accountable for and would be eager to be measured against, always and forever. One must be interested in how things look and how things feel and how things work, and then, finally, in the money. One must know that the money, while not key, is a serious consideration, but only a consideration. It is not the primary reason or a justification for being in business. One must forget the economic model of reality. For an e-myth enterprise, there is no economic model. The economic model is a myth. For an e-myth enterprise, there are only people and cosmic forces that none of us understands, and whatever or whoever created all this. One must pay attention to people, to what is imprisoning them, to what is frustrating them, to what is inhibiting them, to what is restraining them, to what is depriving them of a rich, energizing, intelligent, and forceful life. In order to pay attention to others, one must be conscious of oneself. One must be honest with oneself. One must continually watch oneself. No excuses, no defenses, no lies, no dishonesty, no exit. One must become a soldier on the conscious front. I'm not saying that to build an e-myth enterprise, one must be conscious. That's too much for anyone to ask. What I am saying, however, is that one must wish to be conscious. One must wish to be whole. One must wish to be objective. One must wish to be impartial. One must wish to be detached. One must wish to be free of the automatic responses, the unconscious behavior that fills each of our days. One must wish to be human in the fullest sense of that word. When I think of John Anderson, when I think of Mary Connor Brown, when I think of Marino Santos, when I think of Merle, when I think of each extraordinary small business owner I have had the privilege to work with since I started my business 13 years ago, when I think of all that, I think of the wish that saw us all through. Not the wish to be successful. That was never it for any of us, and never will be. But the wish to do what we set out to do in the most human way possible. The wish to be true to something higher than the multitude of competing priorities that continually drag us down to earth. The wish to touch something quieter, finer, deeper, more resolute, more compassionate, more courageous, more challenging, more worthy, more human, more dignified in the course of our lives. It is my contention that no business, no matter what it does, can become great if its people wish for anything less than these things. An e-myth enterprise is a business. business that takes personal responsibility for the condition of the world it finds itself in, for the condition of the people with whom it interacts, for the condition of their children and their children's children, for the condition of the very quality of life itself. A business with conscience. That is, I believe, the only mission worthy of the name. To create a world in which people are present, honest, open, and alive. To create a world in which people make conscious decisions in good conscience. That is what shooting for the moon is all about. And one cannot do it in one's sleep. It requires all we have. And it requires it now. Designing the Enterprise. The Takeaway Points. An E-Myth Enterprise is a business that takes personal responsibility for the condition of the world it finds itself in, for the condition of the people with whom it interacts, for the condition of their children and their children's children, for the condition of the very quality of life itself. A business with conscience. That is, I believe, the only mission worthy of the name. To accomplish this mission requires all that we have. If you enjoyed this recording, you may also like E-Myth Mastery, The E-Myth Revisited, and Awakening the Entrepreneur Within.